As always, Kent, I have a few things to cover, but first tell me what you'd like to discuss, anything Supernova-wise over the last month that you'd like to talk about, or practice-wise.
Yeah, not today, Rob. I'm anxious to hear what you have for me, but, yeah, I don't have anything on my agenda today.
All right. How is your recently married daughter doing?
They're doing pretty good. My wife talks to them frequently, and they seem to be doing pretty good. She's looking for a teaching job, and she's been out and done some substitute teaching, so they seem to be doing pretty good. Nothing,
right.
You know, nothing outstanding either way.
Is you think he's embracing his recovery?
I hope so. Yeah, I think so. From everything that I've seen and everything that I have heard, it certainly appears to be that way.
Good, good. That's the first step. Can't understand.
Yeah.
You can't do it by yourself.
Right.
You good. All right. Tell me where you think you are, Kent, with the first two parts of Supernova. And let me just ask you some specific questions. Around the segmentation, the last thing I have written down is your practice is down to its core, which is 75 clients or households plus 25 butlers. Is that still about the same number?
Yes.
All right. Are you making that part of your brand, the fact that you have a concierge practice for a limited number of people, that you have intentionally limited your practice to 100 households, a maximum of 100 households?
When you say making that part of my brand, let me answer the question by telling you what I am doing. When I sit and talk to clients or am introducing Supernova to them, I tell them that very thing. It's a concierge practice. I've limited it to 100 clients. And so in our initial meeting about Supernova, I do go over that with them. But maybe you can help me tell me what I need to do to make it more part of my brand. The people who are already Supernova clients, I don't think I've ever gone back and revisited with them or reminded them that I've limited it to 100. So that's what I've done. I talk about it once, and I probably haven't talked about it with those Supernova clients since then. So help me, tell me what I need to do to make it more part of my brand.
There is people are looking for, when you're talking to prospective clients, Kent, they're looking for different. They're looking for uniqueness. They're not looking for what they've got now. If they liked what they had now, they wouldn't be talking to you more than likely. Do you agree with that?
Yes.
All right. The fact that you have a intentionally smaller practice, not in assets but in number of people, makes it different. And I think the way you tied all this together is you talk about what you do. You don't lead with "I have," and I'm probably going to adjust my words a little bit, but you're not going to lead with the fact that you've limited your practice to 100 people. These are the things that you offer: monthly scheduled contact, quarterly reviews, two of those face to face, a rapid response to any questions or problems or inquiries that you have with a 24-hour resolution standard. I offer multi-generational and fully implemented planning. The way I am able to do all of that is I limit the size of my practice. Do you see how that ties together?
Yeah.
And I think the way I would suggest that you phrase it, when you say I've got 100 households, I've limited to 100 households, here's the question that you might get from your client. Well, what's going to happen if you get above 100? So I think this is a gentler way to say the same thing. I would just say the way I can deliver this is I limit the size of my practice. Now, if they want to go beyond that and say, well, what, how many households do you have? Then I would say, I have 75 households. My suspicion is that when I get to 100, I'll have to take another look. I might have to figure out a way to increase my capacity. I don't like the way I'm going down this path. Let me back up. The way I can deliver all these things is I limit the size of my practice. Well, what does that mean, Kent? Well, what that means is I will never let my practice grow to the point, and you're going to know where I'm going here, that the service I'm giving to my existing clients is compromised. I will never let my practice grow to the point that I cannot deliver what I'm talking to you about today. How's that sound to you?
Sounds good.
Because if you got a lead into a company that was downsizing, and you've got 75 households now, and you could open up $30 million plus relationships, you would figure out a way to get that done.
You betcha.
And then you'd have to take a step back, and there aren't many ways you can increase your capacity. You can work longer hours, and that's hardly ever the right answer.
Yeah.
You can add somebody to your team, or you can reduce the number of clients. That's the only way you can add capacity.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't want to be disingenuous. I mean, if you've got an opportunity to open $30 million plus relationships, you're going to do it, and I'm going to fly to Las Vegas and help you get it done. At that point, you'll have to make a decision on how to increase the capacity of your practice, and one of those is reducing the number of households.
Right.
Got it? So when you're talking to people, I would focus on the uniqueness of your practice. My practice is unique. I have intentionally limited the number of people in my practice. The way I can deliver these things to you, Ms. Jones, is that I can deliver all the things to you that I've talked about is I don't have 200 households. And I'll never let my practice grow to the point that I cannot provide the service that I give to my existing clients. Having said that, I want to limit the size of my practice also, so I always have capacity to bring on people like you. You can be sending a mixed message, Kent, if you say I've limited my practice, but I'll take you.
Right.
So does all that fit together for you?
It sure does.
Okay. But it's so important that people know that people hear it all the time. I don't think there's ever been an advisor who's opened a new relationship and says, and you know what, Mr. Jones, I'm going to offer really lousy service.
No.
But there are FAs who opened relationships and ultimately have delivered really lousy service. So clients have heard this in the past. So when you talk about what you do, then you tell them what the uniqueness of your practice is. This is what I deliver, and this is how I do it, by limiting the capacity. Okay?
Okay.
Okay, so that's – I think it's imperative that clients know that about your practice. Second thing in segmentation is establishing a minimum. Now, the last thing I have written down is 250. Is that still your minimum?
At this point, yes.
Okay, why are you? I'm not trying to manipulate you here and send you a certain direction. This is a sincere question. What keeps you from raising it?
I think the thing that keeps me from raising it, Rob. I knew that this was our last call, and I've kind of done some soul searching. I've kind of gone back and read some of the old material, from the manual, because this is just been doing some contemplating, And, you know, one of the things I read in the material is that you need to have about as many prospects as you do have clients. Rob, I hardly have any prospects whatsoever. And that bothers me, because I'm not necessarily doing anything to prospect. My pipeline is pretty low. And, so I guess the thing that keeps me from raising it to 250 is the fact that I still have room for 25 more clients, and I hardly have any prospects. So I guess my focus is not so much on the number. I mean, well, 250 is better than what I used to have, you know, before I started Supernova. But I just feel as though I need to do something to start getting some prospects. And that's more of my focus. So, rightly or wrongly, I'm not as focused on raising the 250 until I get, you know, some prospects that I start working with. That'll change my mind. But right at the moment, I'm babbling now.
I understand what you're saying. It's interesting that you bring up prospects. I'm looking on the second page of my outline today, and it says, how many prospects do you have right now? So we're thinking along the same way, Kent. One of the ways that you control your capacity is your minimum. So
right, and I get that.
I think that for a person with your experience, and what do you annualize? Still a little under a million?
Yeah.
250 is low. That's what I think. I understand your thought process. I would tell you that I would look for reasons to raise it. I'm
okay.
Not telling you to raise it. That's not my job. If when you get to 85, 90 clients, then I think it's going to be important that you raise your minimum, because your minimum is part of your brand.
Mm-hmm.
And I told you the story of one of your folks out in Colorado who told a CPA that her minimum was 250. She just raised it to 500, but she didn't want to, this guy had given her referrals before, and she didn't want to seem ungrateful. So when he asked her minimum, she said 250 instead of the 500, and his response was, it's that little. So, and again, my point in telling you that is your minimum is part of your brand. Now, let's think for a second how you can spiff the 250 up a little bit with facts, not manipulation. If you looked at your top 10 clients, what do you think the average of your top 10 clients would be asset-wise?
The average?
Yeah, just
guess. It's probably north of a million, because I've got one client that's, you know, 5 million, one that's 7 million. I mean, there's two right there. So my top 10 has to be north of a million.
Yeah, so the way you present that, and this is going way back to early in Supernova, is you have an absolute minimum and you have a target minimum. And the way you present that is my minimum is 250 unless there are circumstances. And an example of an extenuating circumstance, Kent, is somebody's got less than 250 now, but they're going to retire, and in November they're going to have a $2 million rollover, and it's coming to you. That's an extenuating circumstance. You'd open that relationship. I've only had one person say they wouldn't open that relationship in that example. So when you say my absolute minimum is 250 unless there are extenuating circumstances, but having said that, Mr. Brown, it's important that you know that a disproportionate share of my business is driven by people with more than a million.
Mm.
And that's a fact, isn't it?
Yep.
Your top 10 delivers a whole lot more than 10% of your practice.
Oh, yes.
If you did the math, that top 10 would probably represent 30% of your business. Maybe that's high, but not much. So what I want you to do is be able to see the 250, I don't think really reflects your practice, Kent.
Okay.
I think your target minimum more accurately describes your practice. So that's the way I would present it. And again, we're talking about branding here. My minimum is 250, unless there are extenuating circumstances. Having said that, it's important that you know that a disproportionate share of my practice is driven by people with north of $1 million. All right?
Okay.
Okay. The definition of your ideal client. Your ideal client is an absolute minimum of 250, and the soft issues that you like in your favorite clients: likability, trust, return phone calls, all of those things. That's your ideal client. Well, let's go to the organization. You feel like you got your, arms around the organization. You got people scheduled. You got your folders. All of those things.
Yes, I do have those.
Okay, and if you went to your CSA and said, I'm going to take the week of November 16th off, she would know how you want to be rescheduled.
Yes.
Okay, then you've got the organization. All right, homework assignment from last week, and now we're flipping into growing this thing. We talked about the VIPSA conversation. When value is given and value is recognized, that's, in our opinion, the best time to ask for a referral. I ask you to look for 5 conversations like that. Matter of fact, that was our homework for the last 2 weeks, because last week we had a discussion around some the things going on in your life. Were you able to have those 5 calls, those 5 conversations?
No, I did not.
Tell me why.
Since the last time we talked, we had the conversation, but I didn't leave it on my desk, and it just seemed like for the last month, I've just been running a little bit behind in preparing for those calls, and
yep.
And the sad part is that I've done enough of them now that if I have to, Rob, I can wing it without doing an agenda. And it just seemed like I got behind, and I just never could catch up. So I was hardly ever prepared for the calls that were coming up. It just seemed to be a busy month with other things going on, coming to the practice. Some of them really good things, but I have to have that VIPS in front of me. I've had the conversation with a couple of others, but I didn't focus on the 5 conversations. And I just kind of got behind and seemed as though I could never quite catch up.
It would be hard for me to work with. For me, it would be hard to work. It would be difficult to work with everything you've got going on in your life.
But what choice do I have, Rob? I mean, I appreciate you saying that, and I feel it's very sincere, and you are not the first person who said that to me.
Yeah. Well, here is, you asked me what choices you have. You have the choice, but you know, God gives us emotions, Kent, and to not recognize those emotions or deal with those emotions is not good for us. So
okay.
For you to whistle in and say, well, don't worry, be happy, I don't think is it's a horrible song, but it's in addition to that, it's not practical. So here's what worked for me, Kent. Is making a list, and one of the things that I sent to you last night, I think it was last night, yeah, it was last night, was that game board.
Have it right in front of me.
Okay. Well, let's. This is the very last thing on my list, so we're gonna go here and then work back. You see from that game board, the game board is a maximum of 2 things that you put on the list to get done in the next week. The full thought process is you have a weekly meeting with your assistant. You talk about what's going on, what you need done. She updates you on where she is. And then each of you put something on one or 2 things on the game board. And then in the next weekly meeting, you go to the game board and judge how many of those things you got done. So if you could, if you put on here, just say as advisor one, instead of where it says train COIs, you put VIPSA. That's the task, and then you got to quantify it. So let's say going back that you decide today, you're going to have your weekly meeting this afternoon, and what you're going to put on the game board, one of the things is you're going to put the task is going to be VIPSA, and the goal is going to be 5. To be on your game board, Kent, it has to be doable. This isn't where you say, I want to do more than a million. Mm-hmm. This is something that you can get done, and then a task that can get done in the next week, and then you have to quantify it. You just can't say, I want to have VIPSA conversations. I want to have 5 VIPSA conversations. I want to have 3 niche expansion conversations, whatever. If you put more than 2, it becomes a laundry list, and what FAs do, and I know because I was one, you got a long list. I always started with the easiest one. When you just put 2 things, it's hard to hide from 2. So what you can do, you know, you can't check your emotions at the door. That to me is unhealthy and unreasonable. But what you can do is give yourself a focus on what you want to get done. Do you understand my thought process? So right now, if you had to, and it, just for the sake of the exercise, it might not be something you'd put if you had a little time to think about it, but what's one thing you would put on your game board that if you got it done in the next 5 business days would be a plus for your practice?
Honestly?
Yes.
Go back and reread my VIPSA notes.
Well, okay. That is something you could put on the game board. You could do that. Competent with VIPSA conversation. But let's go through that. I've got a little extra time today. Do you?
You know what? I was kind of hoping and praying you would say that.
Well, it's answered.
That's right. Prayer works.
I gave a presentation in Iowa last Thursday.
Oh, yeah?
I was hired to talk for 3.5 hours about Supernova.
Wow.
Yeah, and I'm not a big talker. And my prayer was that I was over-prepared. My prayer was that I could deliver it and it would be helpful to the people who were in the 75 advisors who were in the crowd. And it went great. I mean,
super.
There were lots of questions. The 3.5 hours was broken into two segments. And after the first segment, I was about 20% through the material and 50% of my time was gone. But they were great discussions.
Perfect.
So my prayer got answered. I haven't been the answer to prayer many times in my life. This is a big day. Okay. Here's what I want you to do. I want you to get out a piece of paper, and I want you to write in a vertical form. I want you to write a V, and then an I, and then a P, and an S, and an A. You got it?
Okay, done. Yep.
Okay. Now, the V is value. The best time to ask for a referral, and Kent, you're a nice man. Your clients like you. We've established that fact. You've got a lot of clients who have been with you through thick and thin, correct?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
They recognize your value. Your job is to recognize that they're recognizing the value. And here's a lot of times that value is recognized through the form of a thank you. Kent, thank you for guiding me through these volatile markets. Thank you for allowing me to sleep better at night. Thank you for whatever it is. Thank you is recognition of value. And the number one thing you have to do here, the first thing you have to do is you have to confirm that you heard it. Mr. Brown, thank you for saying that. I work really hard to deliver that type of guidance or whatever it is they have complimented you on. You've got to confirm you heard it. You can't deflect it and do that and I used this term with you before, that aw shucks thing, aw shucks. But
right.
I do. So thank you for saying that. I work really hard to deliver that level of guidance. And then in a millisecond, Kent, you determine whether or not this is the appropriate time to have the conversation.
Okay.
FAs shame themselves that every time they're talking to a client, they're not asking for a referral. If you ask for a referral every time you saw a client, they would be uncomfortable. They would feel manipulated. So let that feeling go. And the example I painted, and I may have painted with you, if you're at a wake and Mr. Brown is there in the casket and Ms. Brown comes up and says, oh, Kent, John loved you so much. You took care of us. I don't know what we would have done without you. You confirm that you heard it, but wouldn't you agree that's not a very good time to start a referral conversation?
Right, exactly. Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So not every time. So if you determine that it is, the I is importance. You can't be soft around this. You can't, I know I've never asked you this before. I hope this doesn't insult you. You ask confidently. That demonstrates that this is important to you. That's the I. And it goes like this, Ms. Jones just thanks you for your guidance. Gosh, I thank you for saying that. I work really hard to deliver that level of guidance, so that type of guidance. Do you know anyone else who might appreciate that guidance? Now, do you see, Kent, how you're asking around the specific thing they just complimented you on?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
That old thing of, who do you know I need to be talking to? Gosh, that makes me shiver. I hate that.
Yeah, yeah.
In my mind, if it works, it works. It doesn't feel professional to me. But somebody's complimented you, they've recognized value, and you're offering to help other people around what they've just recognized as value. So that's the I. You ask confidently. Again, these people know you, they like you, they trust you, or they would leave.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Ms. Jones says, gosh, I can't think of anybody right now. What I need you to know is that that's what she means. She's not saying you've insulted her. She's not saying anything except I can't think of anybody right now. So the P is permission, and you say, well, do you have a minute to brainstorm? That's asking permission. Or if you don't like the word brainstorm, put another one in there. And Ms. Jones says, gosh, Ken, I'm happy to brainstorm. So now you go to the S, and that's the suggest. Anybody come to mind you go to church with, who's retiring, your business partner, people you play golf with, people you play tennis with, people you travel with. You know your clients, so you know how to ask that question. So do you have a minute to brainstorm? Sure. Well, anybody, and you go through those things. And she looks at you, and she still doesn't have an answer because she hadn't had time to think about it. And she says, Kent, I'm still drawing a blank. So the way that you step away from that conversation in a professional manner, thanks for thinking about it. Just know I'm never too busy to help people like you. You got it?
Mm-hmm.
Now, that is a professional conversation. You've gotten two no's. Most FAs, after they get a couple of no's around referrals, wish they had never started down that path. I have never had an FA tell me, Kent, that they did the VIPSA and they got ACATS the next day. Maybe it's happened. never said that. So
right.
You're giving people who like you an opportunity. Now, think about this. You have this VIPSA conversation with a client, and yesterday this client was playing golf with his best friend, who for the whole 18 holes was whining about the service they got from Merrill Lynch.
Mm.
But because you haven't had this conversation, he probably is saying, gosh, I'm sorry that happened. But if he's playing golf the day after you have this VIPSA conversation, he's going to say, you got a chance of him saying, well, you know, I met with my advisor yesterday. He does a terrific job. He meets with me on a monthly basis. He returns my phone calls. He does a lot of planning. You ought to talk with him. So what you've done is you've made this a front of mind experience for this client.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Now, what if the client says, "Kent, I can't believe you're asking me this question. My best friend is just hates his relationship with Morgan Stanley. We played golf yesterday, and he was just whining the whole time. I'm going to have him call you. Well, that call isn't going to come. At least it usually doesn't come.
Right.
So here's what you say. Gosh, I would love to talk with him. If you were me, how would you go about getting in front of him? And they may ultimately say, Kent, well, I'm just more comfortable having them call you. But you were going to be there anyway if you didn't ask that question. If you were me, how could you get in front of them? Now, if you go through the VIPSA conversation and you get no, thanks for thinking about it. I'm never too busy to help people like you. You make that a note of that, and you might want to come back to that in a couple of months. Remember, Ms. Jones, I met back in October. We had a conversation. You had said such great things about the guidance that I had provided. I asked if you knew anybody else who would appreciate that same type of advice. Has anybody come to mind? You see how you can go back and revisit that?
Yeah.
So that's it, Kent. Now let's walk through it slowly, and I'm going to be the client, and you're going to be Kent Deaver. You ready?
Okay.
The thing in front of you. I'm going to start. We've just finished a portfolio review, and I say, Kent, I want to tell you, I really enjoy our relationship. You always return my calls. Guided me through some difficult markets. I really appreciate the guidance you've given me. Okay, now it's your turn.
Well, thank you, Rob, for saying that. That makes me feel good. And I just want you to know I work really hard to deliver that kind of service and that kind of guidance for you. Do you know of anyone else, Rob, who would appreciate the type of guidance and the type of monthly call that we have?
Gosh, Kent, let me think. Gosh, nobody comes to mind right now.
I understand that. Do you have just a second? Do you have a few minutes just to brainstorm with me?
Oh, sure. I'd be happy to.
Okay, Rob, think about for just a minute some of the people with whom you associate, people that you like, your friends. Think about people perhaps who are getting ready to retire, or people that you go to church with that have mentioned something like this. Perhaps it's somebody you play golf with. I'll just run through a few. You just think about them. Maybe a friend who was recently widowed, or maybe it's a business associate. These are some of the types of people that you talk to that maybe I could work, maybe I could help. Any of those come to mind for you?
And I see what you're asking me, and you know, maybe I just had enough coffee this morning, but gosh, nothing's coming to mind.
Well, I understand that, and I really appreciate you taking the time not only to brainstorm with me, but to just even to be thinking about it. And just know, Rob, that I am never, ever too busy to help people like you.
Well, you're kind. You've taken good care of me, and I'll try to be a little more attentive for people who would appreciate what you do. Now, Kent, the one part you said never, ever, just you know, that's a, for me, that's a little flamboyant. Just know I'm never too busy to help people.
Oh, okay. Okay. Don't overdo it.
Don't overdo it. This is a great conversation because it comes when clients recognize value.
So right.
You did that well. Usually when people do it for the first time, it feels a little robotic.
Yeah.
Thank you for saying that, Ms. Jones. I work really hard. But you didn't sound like that. But what I know is if you will practice that, you will get really, really good. The very best thing is our thoughts, Supernova's thoughts, put into your words. So when the people recognize value, you confirm that you heard it. You quickly determine whether or not this is the appropriate time. If it is, Ms. Jones, thank you for saying that. I work really hard to deliver that type of guidance. You know anyone else who might appreciate that same type of guidance? Well, Kent, nothing's coming to mind right now. Well, do you have a minute to brainstorm, to think about it? I'd be happy to. Well, can you think, anybody come to mind who maybe is getting ready to retire, has retired, is looking for income, you play golf with, anybody like that come to mind? Kent, I'm still drawing a blank. Well, Ms. Jones, thanks for thinking about it. Just know I'm never too busy to help people like you. I mean, Kent, the way you learn things really well is you use them.
Yes.
And after you use that a couple of times, it's going to be second nature to you. You have been in conversations in your life with the clients, and they recognize value, and you haven't, they've said thank you, whatever, and you just didn't pick up on it because you
weren't looking. Yeah, oh,
yeah. Now you want to be looking. So, the VIPSA conversation is about as simple as it gets. Now, let me ask you another quick question. Did you ever find out who Southwest Airlines refers their retiring pilots to?
No, I did not.
Okay, that could be something on your game board. Southwest Airlines. Southwest Airlines is calling one of your pilot clients and asking the question, when people retire, the Southwest, well, you already know they refer them to somewhere, don't you?
Yeah.
Who is it that they refer you all to? So does he know other pilots who are retiring?
He must. I mean, I don't know. He's introduced me to one other pilot. I went over to his offices one day for lunch, and he introduced me to another pilot, and we had a nice conversation, and I left my card with the guy, and nothing ever came of it. He actually lived here in St. George, Utah, and picked up and moved to Dallas, so he. That was the only real referral he's ever given me.
Yeah. Well, let's spend a second. You remember our conversations about expanding a niche?
Vaguely.
Well, let's sharpen that a little bit. What's your biggest niche?
I don't know.
Well, you got doctors, lawyers, business owners, retirees. Executives. I mean, you look at your top 10. Do you see any commonalities?
Top 10 is business executive, retirees, airline pilot, one attorney, couple of attorneys, another business executive.
All right. What? How many do you think? You think you've got 10 retirees?
Yes.
Okay. Well, let's just think about that. Now, Nick, let me just take a little bit of a step back here. One of the reasons that people don't get into referral conversations, Kent, is they don't have confidence that they do anything special. And some of them don't do anything special. You have to know, one of the biggest responses that I get from people who've been doing this for a while, we don't coach rookies, is that they have more confidence. They know what they deliver is different from what the competition delivers. So mm-hmm. when you're in front of a prospect and you can talk about your service model and what you deliver, that's going to make you unique in their eyes. So don't ever forget that. What you're doing is different. My experience at Supernova and certainly my experience at Merrill Lynch confirms that thought. All right, so the way you grow a niche, let's say you got retirees. The first thing you have to do, Kent, is you have to have three reasons you like dealing with them. And they got to be real reasons. And, for example, you all need my help. I've got retirees. You follow my advice. You return my phone calls. Whatever the three reasons are, and it starts like this with a member of the niche. You're talking with a retiree, Mr. Jones. Do you have a minute to give me some advice? Sincerely asking for advice is one of the ways that you influence people.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have a minute to give me some advice? Yeah, sure. What do you need? Well, I would like to add more retirees to my practice. Retirees need my help. They're intellectually curious, but they follow my advice. And retirees are among my favorite clients. I really enjoy dealing with retirees. Here's the advice part, Mr. If you were me, how would you go about getting in front of more retirees? And then you shut up. They know, I mean, what could the answer be? The answer could be, gosh, I play golf with three retirees every Thursday. Why don't you come out and have lunch with us? Or I have a good friend who's also retired. Let's the three of us have lunch or whatever. But I know that, again, I know they know how to get in front of other retirees, as specific retirees, just as well as you do, better than you do. So that's the process. You got a niche. Let's say business owners. You're talking to a business owner. Mr. Jones, you have a minute to give me some advice. Kent, I'd be happy to give you some advice. I would really like to add more business owners to my practice. You all understand risk. You're busy running a business. You need my help. And my business owners I deal with follow my advice. Here's the advice part. If you were me, how would you go about getting in front of more business owners? And they'll either have ideas or they won't. If they can't, nothing's coming to mind right now. What are you going to say? Well, this is from 15 minutes ago. Well, thanks for thinking about it. Just know I'm never too busy to help people, business owners like you. So if you think about the niches that you have, and if you really got down and looked at your niches, you've probably got five or six. You know, a niche can be five people.
Mm-hmm.
If everybody in that niche, if half the people in the niche put you in front of somebody, that could significantly impact your practice.
Mm-hmm.
Agreed?
Yes.
So those are the two. Those are the two. Those are the two acquisition strategies, Kent, that I think are the most productive and the quickest to implement. Centers of influence are awfully powerful, but it takes time to get them trained so they can specifically describe your practice.
Mm-hmm. When is the timing of doing the niche conversation? Is that on one of your monthly calls? Is that a what are your thoughts there?
To tag on, I think it's much more effective to call somebody out of the blue. They may be busy or whatever.
Right, right.
You say, hey, do you have a minute to give me some advice? It's not going to flow as well as if you're winding up a monthly call. And you
okay.
say, do you have a few minutes to give me some advice?
Okay, perfect.
I just think it's much smoother.
Okay. Okay,
all right.
Good.
Mm-hmm. All right. Those work, Kent. They work. It's just getting comfortable with them and making sure that you're asking those questions every time that it's appropriate. Do you have Bill Kate's book, Get More Referrals Now?
I sure do.
If you look on page 70, I think it's page 70, he lists 10 ways to get value conversations started.
Yeah, I think there's three of them you don't like.
Yeah, there's three that really make me uncomfortable. There's one there that I like. It's after you've told a client, taught them a different way to think about things. The client says, gosh, Kent, I never thought about it that way. And you have the opportunity to say, well, one of the things I do is I think I look at my business differently from a lot of people, and I can do that because I have an intentionally smaller practice. I have the time. You know anybody else who might appreciate that same type of thinking? Make sense?
Yep.
All right. What do you annualize that this year? I mean, I know last time it was a little less than a million. How close are you going to get?
I'm right about where I was last year, probably about between 925, 950, maybe a little bit less than last year.
Yeah. Well, a lot of times the end of the year is a little quicker. I know that you want to do a million. I know that your wife really would like for you to do a million for your sake. You've got time to open some really good size accounts and still have them get in this year. I know that most of what you do is fee-based business, and it's not like dropping a mutual fund ticket.
Right.
But you could certainly, if you thought about this, if you open $5 million relationships between now and the end of the year, the chances are you're going to find some business in there.
Mm-hmm.
But what I'd focus on what you can control. You can't control outcomes, Kent. You never have been able to in this business.
Right.
All you control is your own activity. And for you, having these conversations is how you spin up your energy level around growing the practice. If you knew between now and the end of the year you would open $5 million plus relationships, you would be able to feel it. It would give you an energy. And what I would suggest is you give yourself that opportunity. You've got clients out there who would really love to help you. In some cases, you've never started the conversation.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You got the structure. You got the brand. Part of your brand is you limit the size of your practice. You offer a concierge practice for a limited number of people. I know I've asked you this question, but I don't have it in my notes. Where are you in the planning process? What percentage of your clients have an up-to-date plan?
I'm probably 60-70% of the way there.
Okay, that's good. And
that's really good for me because I've never done it before.
Yeah, and would you say that those plans, that 60-70%, most of those are up to date, which means they've been revisited in the last year?
Yeah, because most of them have been created within the last 18 months. So,
if you back and reviewed those plans, that you would find things that haven't been implemented yet?
Possibly, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not just talking about the liabilities. I mean, the asset side. I'm talking about making sure wills are up to date and the healthcare powers of attorney and all those things have been taken care of.
I was going to ask you that question, and if it's a dumb question, I apologize, or too simplistic. One of the things that you had me ask, you know, or when I did my homework, is, you know, is there will up to date? And again, it's maybe a dumb question, but if somebody has a trust, that replaces the will, does it not? I mean, if you have a trust, I don't need to be asking you about your will. Or is that not accurate?
Can't I don't know for sure. I know that titling of assets overrides a whatever the will says. If it's a revocable trust, that can be changed. For example, you could change the beneficiaries on a revocable trust.
Mm.
But if it's irrevocable trust, there's not much you can do with it. You got a go-to attorney that you use?
Yeah.
Here's what I would do. I would go to that attorney and just say one of the things you want to focus on in the last quarter is to really make sure my clients have up-to-date wills and all the things, healthcare power of attorneys and all those things. If you were having those conversations, tell me some of the questions you would ask.
Okay.
Tell me what are some of the questions, some of the issues that you see people make mistakes on. And, you know, if that attorney came to you and said, I'm going to focus the last quarter on people's financial lives, give me some questions that I ought to be asking just to get a handle on whether they're in good shape or not. You would love to sit down with that
scene. Oh, yeah, right. Yeah, be giddy.
Be giddy, because what you would make up, and it probably would be making it up, is if he finds some things, he's going to bring it back to me. He's going to refer those
mm-hmm.
to me.
Mm-hmm.
So when you do that and sit with an estate planning attorney and say what I said a minute ago, I think he's going to have respect for what you do. He's going to help you get prepared. And I think he'd be pleased to help you, because he's going to feel like you're looking for business for him.
Mm-hmm. Right. Right.
I'd get that. If I had a game board, I would put that on the game board. I think that could be huge for you in the last quarter.
Okay.
Are you a CFP?
No.
I am, and I feel a little inadequate that I can't answer that question. I think I do it one time.
Worry about it, Rob.
I've been a CFP, I think, since 83. So
yeah, don't worry about it.
Well, there are some things to do. I'd go have that conversation with the estate planning attorney. I would get that. I'd be looking for opportunities on that with that VIPSA script, and I would identify your niches, and I would have those niche expansion conversations with everybody who's in a niche. You get all that stuff going, Kent, something's gonna light a fire.
Yeah, I can see that those are three of the quickest things and possibly some very effective things to do, and I'm very energized by that, because like you say, centers of influence, those things, they do take time, and they're worth it, and I need to be doing that. But I can see how these are three things that that I'm not doing that are pretty easy to implement once I get comfortable with them.
You could have a couple appointments today with the VIPSA script. I mean, these are, like you say, you have five niche expansion conversations. If you get a couple of referrals out of that, you go see the attorney.
Yeah.
You give yourself a lot, spin that up, a lot of good activity. And I would focus, I'd find out about that Southwest Airlines thing too.
Yeah, that's still on the forefront of my mind. And, I think I mentioned to you I didn't want to get into it, but I think we went about it in a different way rather than saying, you know, who do they refer to? Just give him kind of the the niche speech, and then it would naturally come out of that. Since you and I last spoke, my manager wanted to take. I suggested to my manager, he's one of the people that we should take to lunch, and so I invited the client to lunch. And lo and behold, he brought his wife with him, which he never does before, never has before. And so the timing wasn't good at that particular lunch with her there. I didn't feel it was very good. So, but he and I meet every month, and so that is on the forefront of my mind. So I am going to have that conversation, the niche conversation with him. And in the course of that conversation, Rob, I believe I can throw in the question, well, who is it that Southwest is referring people to?
Yeah, and you might say, I just like to know more about the competition for that business.
Yeah. And I didn't mean to, when I said earlier today, you know, what choice do I have, I didn't mean that in a self-defeating or negative way. But when you said to me today, you said, Kent, I couldn't do what you do. I at that point in time, I wasn't really sure where you were going, and I didn't know if you were telling me I just need to give up and quit or if you had a solution. And obviously you had a solution, but that was almost my first reaction is when you said, Kent, I can't do what you do. I have heard that before from some other people, and I'm just sitting here thinking, what are these people telling me? Are they telling me to quit? I don't really know. So I didn't mean anything by it, but that's my first gut reaction, because you're not the first one I've heard it from. So I hope that explains the way I came back.
What I said, Kent, was it would be hard for me. I didn't say I couldn't do. I said it would be hard for me to do what.
I'm just telling you what I heard, Rob. I'm not necessarily telling you what you said. I'm telling you what I heard.
Well, that's you know, that's a really good lesson for me. It's not what you say; it's what people hear. They're not always the same thing.
that's true. And even on the listening side, I'm learning, especially with my wife. I'm trying to listen for not the words she's saying, but the meaning she's saying. So that's hard to do, by the way.
Well, let me tell you, you know that thing about there's a great book. We talked about it in the first part of Supernova. It's written by a gentleman named Jim Lehrer. And I'm walking across the room. I'm getting the book in my hand. It's called The Power of Full Engagement. And
got it right here in front of me.
Yeah, and how this applies to what you just told about your wife is what Jim says is people don't want your time, they want your energy, which is your engagement. And what would happen to me, I'd come home sometime and Anna would want to, you know, Anna's been with the kids all day, and I would want to veg out on the couch or turn on the TV or whatever, and we'd start talking, and finally she says, I mean, this is no one-time occurrence, she says, you know, you're not listening to me. I would say to protect myself, I would repeat back everything she had said. But what she wanted, she didn't want my time. She wanted my engagement. She wanted my energy. So that's been a good lesson for me. I mean, it's what we teach, but it also transcends just the business field. It's personal. How you treat people or how you interact with people. She wants your full attention. Anna would rather have 10 minutes of my full attention than an hour of me fading in and out. So, you know, being a good listener is really, really important in confirming, you know, what I've got a friend who's a psychologist, and he talks, if somebody says something, you sometimes you repeat it. So what you're saying is that you would like for me to be home before 5:30 a lot of the day, or whatever. You just, what you're saying is you would like to have more of my, whatever. You just kind of repeat back to make sure that you're what you're saying, or what your wife is saying is what you're hearing.
Mm-hmm.
It works.
Mm-hmm.
It's 11:15. I got I got to grab a bite to eat before I have my next call at in 45 minutes. Hey, Kent, this is our last call. I'm going to give you something here sincerely. If you've got something that's on your mind, I can't pick up the phone and call me. I could be driving down the road and have nothing to do. So if you got things that pop up that you need a quick answer on, or how to handle this, or whatever, call me.
I appreciate that very much, Rob, because I will definitely do that. And very quickly, I know you've got to run, but I'm seriously considering another round of calls for next year, if you'll have me.
Oh, Kent, all day long. I would. I enjoy the relationship we've established. You're a good student. You do the work. So all you got to do is call Cindy or email Cindy. She keeps my schedule.
Okay. Yeah, I really think that's what I want to do. And but I've got to get the budget for next year, and I got to get that. And so that's what I would like, Rob.
Well,
but I appreciate the offer on the call, because I do want to call you in the next week or two. I want to tell you there's something really good and big going on, and I'd just like to share it with you because I think you're interested. So I will
cool.
do that in the next week or two.
Good. I look forward to that. Three things: VIPSA, niche expansion, and go to lunch with that attorney.
Got it.
All right.
Thanks, Rob.
See you soon. Bye.
All right. Bye-bye.